Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Hello.
Hey. So, Cameron, why do you think Tom Gleason's got so vocal about the future of the TV industry?
I think he's kind of got a point, because whenever we talk about, you know, the future of television and the future of film, there's kind of this doomsday attitude that we've got at the moment, that it seems to be dying. I don't think that it's dying. I think we're at a crossroads where the way that people are watching television and films is evolving in a way that is moving more towards making us a little bit more insular. So we're staying at home more, we're not going out as much. Television shows are getting longer and longer, which means we're staying at home on the couch more. So I think we're at that crossroads where people really need to think about, you know, what is making people break out of their routines to say, go and see a film, or to stay at home and, you know, watch 13 hours of television in one weekend. And some people aren't even watching free-to-air television now because they're so addicted to these streaming services and these different platforms. So I think the thinking now needs to change. It needs to change to, how do we get people's attention now, because they're so stuck in their ways.
Now, in terms of getting attention, Tom Gleason threatened to axe his show if he didn't win the Gold Logie. Is this a sign, you know, about the voting process maybe needing to change, or is the process just all about finding that most popular TV personality?
Yeah. I think with the Logies, you need to kind of think about, you know, its origins, and, you know, it comes from it's like a fan magazine voting process that's split into two categories, and a lot of people kind of don't understand how the Logies work. It's broken between most popular, which is voted by the public, and outstanding, which is voted by kind of industry professionals. And so the way that they're split is why you get that whiplash with the Logies of, okay, this show is the most outstanding, but this one is the most popular. And I think for a really long time, the Logies was probably manipulated in a way that favored certain networks. And now we've kind of moved it to the digital age with social media, and it's a lot more transparent now how that process is manipulated. And I think this year, if you look at the fact that two of the biggest networks didn't win any Logies, may kind of speak to the way that things are changing, because maybe the networks aren't concerned about the Logies anymore as a publicity tool. And so they've decided not to kind of engage in the race and the publicity. And I think Gleason's act has kind of, and treating it like a joke, has kind of exposed all of its flaws.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, it's kind of exposed the fact that as an award ceremony, it is a publicity tool, but maybe networks aren't concerned about that anymore, because they're moving on, and they're saying, well, maybe we don't need the Logies anymore because of the way that they're rolling out their shows and the way that people are discovering things, you know, in their own time. So if you see that something's won an award, you're not going to rush to watch it. You're more likely to go and watch something or binge something if someone says to you, I'm obsessed with this show.
Yeah.
And you've got to get out of the spoiler zone. People are like, oh, I'm going to go and watch that straight away. Awards are increasingly becoming less of a publicity factor now.
So going back to that point you made about the insularity of the TV experience now, Tom Gleason claimed that his co-workers in the industry no longer even watched each other's work and would rather watch stream shows, you know, like Chernobyl or something like that. Why then are people still, why do we still watch broadcast television when the people making it aren't even watching it?
Yeah, I think broadcast television now is moving more towards event television, or television you can kind of engage with. So the example you mentioned before, Married at First Sight, I think the reason why that show is so popular is because people aren't really watching that show, they're half watching it. So you've got multiple screens open when you're watching Married at First Sight, and you're more watching it for the online conversation. So you're live tweeting it, people are creating memes. Also, there's the sensationalist side of the show where it's so trashy. And people are doing horrible things that it's kind of car crash television. We're just so into it because, you know, our little reptilian brains just want that.
And I guess it gives you something to talk about with other people. So again, right, there's like that commonality of the watching experience.
Yeah, and it's like, how low can we go? How low can we go with a concept to get people talking? And I think something like Married at First Sight, and, you know, it has its defenders and people, you know, there's room for trash. You know, trash television has always been around. It's not something that's new. But I think it just reeks of the desperation of television networks in Australia that's one of the most popular shows. And it's kind of like, how much lower can we go with these reality TV concepts? And also, if you kind of look at the television landscape in Australia, it's dominated by reality TV for that reason. And so dramas and kind of, you know, really interesting series are kind of going to streaming services. So it's really interesting. Some of the best Australian TV right now isn't actually on TV. It's kind of coming from the fringes of streaming services or kind of web series that are kind of rolling out on platforms like iView and SBS On Demand that are kind of rescuing drama in this country a little bit from the grip of this reality TV dominance that I think has just kind of steamrolled television, you know, to the point where The reason why so many people are watching streaming services now is to escape that churn of reality TV, which is really fascinating.
So now, as a final point, I suppose, a study released from the US this week found that audiences, when confronted by too much content on streaming platforms, chose to watch nothing at all on that streaming platform. So yeah. I guess, you know, if streaming platforms kind of figured out a way to offer us just enough to make us watch, would that kind of be like, you know, what's the draw at all of broadcast television?
Yeah, I think, yeah, the streaming services are in a tough spot with you know, I think everyone has had this experience on a Friday night where you go, let's watch something on a streaming service, and you kind of scroll through the options and you're like, we can't find anything to watch. So I think that's where word of mouth comes into it. You know, more than ever, our social feeds and what our friends and family are telling us they're obsessed with is going to dominate what we watch more than whatever algorithm Netflix spits out. So if you love watching science fiction, it'll spit out a whole bunch of science fiction series. But I think now we're starting to see the mechanics of how these services work. So, you know, of course, Netflix is going to spit out a whole bunch of Netflix originals because they want you watching their own content over rivals' content. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, I think, you know, more and more word of mouth is going to become really important. And as we are in all our little bubbles, our little social bubbles now, your friends and family and the people that you talk to are going to probably dominate what you watch more than what the streaming service is telling you to watch, because now we're aware of like how they're using data to get us to watch things, which is a whole new landscape that I think we're only just getting to understand, that, you know, Netflix and all these streaming platforms are using what we watch to influence the decisions that they make. It's kind of like, have you ever seen that movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt where they use the stats of the baseball players to decide who they need to buy and who they need to sell?
I haven't, but I imagine it's, you know, similar idea.
Yeah, it's a similar idea. So using data to influence decisions, I think that's kind of the next big thing. And in Australia, no doubt, as all the local TV networks roll out their own little catch-up services and streaming platforms, they'll be seeing the data coming through the back end there and they'll be going, okay, how do we use this to influence the programs that we make to get more people to watch?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting because it's raw data. It's different from television ratings, which is kind of, you know, it's done very, very differently. Whereas with streaming services, you're getting raw data that is telling you things about people that you can then come away and say, oh, great, we know so many people are loving young adult and science fiction. Let's make more of those shows.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There's a lot to learn, a lot going on still. We're very much in the early parts of it. Thanks so much for joining us this morning to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.